This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Wow. What's up? I just bought and financed a car through Carvana in minutes.
You? The person who agonized 4 weeks over whether to paint your walls eggshell or off-white bought and financed a car in minutes?
They made it easy. Transparent terms, customizable down and monthly. Didn't even have to do any paperwork.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. Hey, have you checked out that spreadsheet I sent you for our dinner options?
Finance your car with Carvana and experience total control. Financing subject to credit approval.
Where'd you get those shoes? Easy. They're from DSW. Because DSW has the exact right shoes for whatever you're into right now. You know, like the sneakers that make office hours feel like happy hour. The boots that turn grocery aisles into runways. And all the styles that show off the many sides of you, from daydreamer to multitasker and everything in between, because you do it all in really great shoes. Find a shoe for every you at your DSW store or DSW.com.
To the first big weekend of Mardi Gras. We had a successful weekend last weekend. Look forward to this weekend. Weather is chilly out there this morning, and be careful. Looks like we'll have some rain as well. Got a great show lined up for you. We will visit with Mark Romick, Chief Marketing Officer over at New Orleans & Company. We'll talk about a number of things, about the Super Bowl, Mardi Gras sustainability, and an application that has been put forward by New Orleans & Company for the Creative Cities application under UNESCO, which has some interesting details and benefits to that. We'll talk about that. In the 11 o'clock hour, Michael Heck joins us, President and CEO of G&O Inc. We'll talk about a number of different things. And we have Sidney Torres IV, the owner and operator of IV Waste. And we'll talk about his preparation for Super Bowl, how that went from their perspective, and what can we expect relative to his participation in the French Quarter and other areas of the city in the future as well. At 10:30, we'll visit with Anita Raj, PhD, Executive Director, Newcomb Institute of Tulane University. She's the author of a study with the Nancy Reeves Drew Endowed Chair and professor at Tulane School of Public Health and Tropical Medicine about a study that reveals a growing mental health crisis in Louisiana, with increasing rates of severe depression, anxiety, and suicidal thoughts among working age adults. And we've talked about that a number of times. I want to talk about a piece that was authored by a good friend and someone that I really respect, an opinion piece in NOLA.com, Ron Foshang. He was conducted a poll, a survey of New Orleans voters sponsored by the City Services Coalition, which he describes as a diverse group of citizens who've come together to reform city government, and that it tells the tale, and the results of this poll are starkly clear, in his words. The poll was conducted from December 16th through December 21st of 2024, so the end of 2024, under Ron's direction, and was based on a representative citywide sample of 600 voters. All of that's important. The ingredients of that survey, obviously very legitimate, good size sample size, a sample size you typically see with these kinds of surveys. Let's start with the good news first. So the voters' view on how the city was managing the Super Bowl at that point in time, it can only go up because of the success that we had, was 72% expressed positive views about how the city was handling Super Bowl. And only 29% rated that negatively. Now remember, this was before the terrorist attack on January 1st, and obviously before the Super Bowl. But overall, a very, very favorable rating. We have said oftentimes that the real challenge here, and Michael Heck and I have talked about this a lot, is capturing this momentum moving forward, recognizing that the public is not real happy with the operations of the city. I had no idea just how disgruntled they truly were. This survey is shocking as to where New Orleans residents of all races, of all ethnicities, where they stand on the management of the city. Only 9% of those polled, 15% of black voters and 5% of white voters, rated management of the city positively. Only 9%. An overwhelming 88% rated it negatively, as Ron points out. And he says that this discontent, these numbers speak for themselves. I don't know that I've actually seen a survey grading city services as bad as this one. Two-thirds of the city electorate believes that the structure of city government needs major changes. 26% say minor changes are needed, and just 3% say no changes at all. Black voters, 70%, white voters, 65%, favor major change. This is emblematic of no one is happy. No one. When we talk about the form of governance that we have in the city, the mayor holding all the power, the council much less, the friction between the mayor and the council, who should prevail, who should have the authority, the structure of sewage and water board, pieces and parts of the overall system managed by public works, the rest by sewage and water board, the mayor again sitting as chairman of the sewage and water board, and whether or not those things need to change, and the appointments to the sewage and water board for the most part handled by the mayor. And the results of the survey bear this out. Ron points out the high levels of public dissatisfaction. 80% of voters, 81% of black voters, and 78% of white voters say the basic structure of the sewage and water board needs major changes. That reeks of dissatisfaction. That reeks of being disgruntled. 15% favor minor changes, and only 2% say no change is needed. This is emblematic of a belief of the constituents of the city of New Orleans that there is a total breakdown in the governance structure of this city. We have talked about this often, and many times I've said, both privately and publicly, that we succeed in spite of ourselves. This is an interesting time for the city. We have elections in the fall. 61% of New Orleans voters want the next mayor to focus on improving the delivery of basic services. 20% favor focusing on expanding social services. And 15% volunteer that the focus should be on both. 67% of whites and 57% of blacks prefer a focus on basic services. How many times have we talked on this show about prioritization? How important that is. We cannot be all things to all people. We need a leader of this city who's going to be willing to stand up and focus on basic services first, achieve some level of excellence there before that we can start focusing on other things. We hear all the time, well, we can walk and chew gum. No, we haven't been able to here in the city. Why? Because the problems are too deep. They're too broad. They're too diverse. It will consume the next leader to get these issues straight. Separate and apart from that, we are facing a cutback management culture in Washington now. as Doge continues to have more and more successes and bring to the forefront issues that I don't think the voters in this country are willing to finance. It doesn't mean all of what they say is correct, but we do know there's a level of fraud and abuse and waste in government. They have it in every organization in this country, which is going to mean that more intense competition for grants, more intense competition for attention from the federal government, more intense competition to get anything from the federal government at all, and more accountability, which brings me to the point of something that I've said for a long time. You have to have the ability to receive the money. You got to be able to execute, and you're going to have the receipts and show the deliverables. And if you're not able to do so, at least for the next 4 years, you're not going to get much. It ain't going to happen. And it all goes to prioritization and execution. This is a defining moment for this city with the elections coming up. We should take it more seriously than ever before about who we are going to grant the privilege of our vote. Plain and simple. Only 15% of city residents say that they're getting their money's worth in exchange for the tax dollars that they pay in New Orleans. 83% say they're not. And the majorities of all demographic groups agree on this matter. It's amazing how in this survey, more and more all folks from all walks of life, from all socioeconomic strata, are now of like mind as it relates to their thoughts about the effectiveness of the governance in this city. Only 10% of voters think local and state entities in the criminal justice field are doing a good job coordinating their efforts to reduce crime. Even worse, as Ron points out, 2%, only 2% think the city departments are doing a good job coordinating public works projects such as drainage, streets, and other infrastructure. Recall that this survey was done before the efforts and the committee that was put together by Michael Heck with the assistance of so many others, Joe Threat with the city. He is a city employee working in public works, where they have collaboratively come together and been able to scratch off a number of issues on a lengthy list of projects that they undertook with success. And hopefully we're able to continue that, because the public is not happy. As it relates to criminal justice, we're very fortunate again. There's a field of candidates that will be running for criminal sheriff. Sheriff Susan Hudson already has an announced candidate opposing her, Michelle Woodfork, former chief with the NOPD. We have an opportunity to make a choice. One between calling folks in the jail inmates as opposed to residents. A softer approach or otherwise. It's an opportunity to look at what folks are actually saying. I'm looking forward to hearing what Michelle Woodfork has to bring forward. But this is a good thing for this city. Having that choice, as we have this defining moment where we're putting together month after month after month as it relates to reductions in crime in the city, we have to keep that momentum going. We have to get the throughput through the court system. That probably is right now the most effective way of fighting crime, is throughput in the courthouse, requiring the cooperation of the criminal sheriff, the DA, and most importantly, judges who understand that management of their dockets are key to the selective incapacitation of the impact criminal that roams the streets of the city of New Orleans that are ruining the quality of life that we hope to achieve. One thing that's very consistent, as Ron points out in his opinion piece about this survey, is that the electorate feels the same way about almost everything that the city has their hands in. 90% or more of voters negatively rate city government's handling of drainage, water, homelessness, street repair, maintenance of sidewalks, removing blight and abandoned buildings, and stopping political corruption. You will recall, under the Landrieu administration in the aftermath of Katrina, we talked about blighted homes throughout the city of New Orleans. I think that the number then was somewhere between 30 and 34,000. I'm not sure that we've made a significant dent. The last time that I asked about this, I think we were down to about 28,000. I don't know where we are right now, but I doubt that we're below 20,000. Again, prioritization and execution and how we're going to follow up on this, because we see news story after news story after news story that presents itself: abandoned housing causing problems, fires being started, folks living next door to this, houses falling down, houses crumbling. And for whatever reason, we're not actually able to maintain a focus on dealing with this issue. We are in 2025, 20 years post-storm, and we're still dealing with this issue. This is an issue that should have been put to rest by now, because all it requires is attention to detail, perseverance, working hard every day. The problem's identified. We know what it is. The legal process is established. We just need to execute. Plain and simple. But again, we have the golden opportunity this year. We have an election. This survey conducted by Ron Fauché would be an incredible template to challenge those candidates to have a plan to address all of this. What are we going to do from a governance perspective? How is this going to work? What are going to be the measures that we can judge one by and their leadership by? I think the electorate in the city of New Orleans is smart enough to recognize that sometimes their expectations cannot be achieved in a year or 2 years or 3 years. It may take 4 to 5. What they want to see is a commitment, and what they want to see is deliverables along that path. I believe that folks are ready to walk that path with a true leader, a credible leader, someone that they can believe in, someone that they feel is a difference maker and is willing to run an open and transparent form of government on all fronts. I think that they're willing to exhibit patience. We didn't get here overnight. We're not going to get out of here overnight. I also believe that these numbers can change. They're very dynamic. And if we continue to stack win on win on win and showing the deliverables of some relatively easy things, right? I mean, if you drive around the outlying parishes to the city, how often do you see traffic lights out? I don't know about you, but I don't see it very often. For some reason, the lights and I guess the electricity, I'm not sure what it is, in the city works differently, because we can't seem to get traffic lights to work. And historically, it's almost the same intersections all the time. We can't seem to pick up barricades and barriers when jobs are actually completed. We can't seem to get other building materials removed when the job's completed. But it's funny, when you drive around in other areas and other parishes, they seem to be able to do these little things. And when people drive to and from work, they're taking the same path and they see the same barrier that's been sitting there for 3 years post-completion, unless they're going to tell us that it's not completed and they're going to use it at some point in time. So maybe temporarily move it. I don't know. But these are the things that fuel the public's perception about the inefficiency and the incompetence of government. The little things. It's not hard. It's not hard. I said the same thing about the bollards, the barriers. It's execution. We started hearing excuses about, you know, beads and material would end up in the sleeve that they had to put the bollard in. That's maintenance. You should have expected that on day one. There's a void in the concrete. Things are going to fall into the void. Unless there's an adequate cover to the void to seal it off. This is not rocket science. And anytime there's a foreign material in the void, when you have tight tolerance levels of the sleeve versus what's going into the sleeve, it doesn't take an engineer to recognize that that's a problem. So what do? You set up a routine to clear the void. It's not hard. It's just that attention to detail and the willingness to do so. The willingness and taking pride in the work and understanding that that implementation of that apparatus leads to a safe and secure community. Would it have made a difference on January 1st? No one knows. No one will ever know. But no one's going to ding you for trying and executing on a plan. I just use that as an example of everything that is provided for by city government. It requires the attention to detail. This is not just busy work. We'll be right back. 504-260-1870 on the Oakland Heart Jewelers Talk and Text Line. Stay with us.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. Indeed sponsored jobs help you stand out and hire fast. With sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. And it makes a huge difference. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Plus, with Indeed sponsored jobs, there are no monthly subscriptions, no long-term contracts, and you only pay for results. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/listen. Just go to Indeed.com/listen right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/listen. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
This President's Day, upgrade the look of your home without breaking your budget. Save up to 40% site-wide on brand new window treatments now at Blinds.com. Blinds.com, the number one online retailer of custom window treatments, is the better way to give your home the presidential treatment. Blinds.com makes it easy with free virtual consultations on your schedule and samples delivered directly to your door, fast and free. Choose from trending woven wood shades or upgrade to motorized. Blinds.com has everything and more, all with upfront pricing and no hidden fees. Need help with installation? Blinds.com can handle it for you. Or DIY with expert guidance from our design pros. With over 25 million windows covered and our 100% satisfaction guarantee, you can count on Blinds.com to deliver results you'll love. Shop Blinds.com's President's Day Mega Sale Last Chance right now and save up to 40% site-wide, plus a free professional measure. Up to 40% off site-wide at Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof like Aloe, Allbirds, or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling and for shoppers buying simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet and the not-so-secret secret, with Shop Pay that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell whenever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout experience as business powerhouses like Aloe, Allbirds, and Skims. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
Hey, I'm Ben Stiller.
I'm Adam Scott.
And we make a TV show called Severance. Severance is back for season 2 on Apple TV+.
Before the premiere, Ben and I are going to be binging season 1 and putting out daily recaps. And after that, we're going to keep going as we recap every episode of season 2.
The Severance podcast with Ben Stiller and Adam Scott is presented by State Farm. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
Listen and follow now on Apple Podcasts, the Odyssey app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
What kind of programs does this school have? How are the test scores? How many kids do a classroom? Homes.com knows these are all things you ask when you're home shopping as a parent. That's why each listing on Homes.com includes extensive reports on local schools, including photos, parent reviews, test scores, student-teacher ratio, school rankings, and more. The information is from multiple trusted sources and curated by Homes.com's dedicated in-house research team. It's all so you can make the right decision for your family. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Welcome back, folks. A new study reveals a growing mental health crisis in Louisiana with increasing rates of depression, anxiety, suicidal thoughts among working age adults. The author of this study, Dr. Anita Raj, executive director, Newcomb Institute of Tulane University, the Nancy Reeves Drew Endowed Chair, Professor Tulane of School of Public Health and Tropical Medicine, joins us. Doc, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Neil. Thanks for inviting me.
Doc, we talk about this a lot, and I've always said that, you know, unfortunately, government funding is incredibly important in dealing with this issue. And whenever there's the landscape or notion of cutback management, one of the first things to get cut that creates a whole lot of instability is mental health. And sometimes it seems as though we never recover. I just wanted to start out there as it relates to your thoughts there, and then let's get into what the study has actually revealed.
I really appreciate you bringing attention to that. I completely agree with you. I think that it's really important to make sure that there's parity in healthcare access for mental health. We have real understanding that nationally it costs about $300 billion a year, the cost of mental health to our society in terms of lost productivity, loss of life. And so it's something that we need to be prioritizing more.
So as we think about that challenge, this study, not unlike, I guess, a lot of others, really points out a real challenge that we have in society today. And it seems as though this study reveals that this number is not getting better, it's getting worse.
Yeah, so this is pretty consistent with what we've been seeing nationally. We've been seeing mental health concerns increasing, depression, anxiety, suicidality, and that's been going on at a national level. You know, we definitely understood why these things went up after COVID. Anytime there's some sort of crisis, we would anticipate this sort of thing. But the fact that it continues to be, if not increasing, at least maintaining itself at a higher level than what we've seen previously, is a deep concern, because we've come out of the pandemic and we're still seeing these high levels of depression, anxiety, binge alcohol use, illicit drug use, and it is a little higher in Louisiana than what we see nationally.
1 in 9 Louisiana adults live with severe depression, anxiety, and thoughts of suicide. Is that one of the highest rates in the country?
Yeah, I'm sorry to say that it is. It is among, you know, it's higher here, and I think we really need to be doing some hard, taking a hard look at what we're doing in the state to help alleviate the depression, anxiety, and suicidality we see, but also to explain why is it higher here.
Yeah, this is the what, right? Not the why. So this is the outcome. I guess it's always, it's kind of like Mercury trying to put our finger on it to figure out what the why is. It comes in, I guess, in a bunch of different varieties, right?
That's absolutely right. I think there's a few things that we can know from these data, because we do know a little bit about the who as well. We know that it's about 1 in 9 people who are affected by these issues at the state level. But when you look at the 18 to 29-year-olds, it gets higher. We start to see about 1 in 6 people have contemplated suicidality in the past year. So we know it's a younger population. We also know that in nationally, what we see is that men are actually a little bit less likely to consider suicidality, but here in Louisiana, they're a little more likely. And that's especially true for the 29 to 44-year-old population. So that we're talking about people who are younger. These are the people who are starting to build their families, create their work lives. And so we know that there's something happening for this age group where we're not meeting the needs.
Could there be a connection between the economic difficulties in this state that we've experienced for a long time for young folks who decide to stay here, and the challenges that they face in trying to be able to support themselves?
Yeah, so what I can tell you is that we do see, and this isn't in this brief, but it's been through other analyses we've done with this data from Louisiana. I can tell you that the history of incarceration, what we call economic distress, a recent eviction, or a situation of economic deprivation in terms of not having enough money for food or basic needs to be met, those are very, very strong risk factors for suicidality and for depression and anxiety.
When we talk about, you know, these what's, I mean, what is your greatest fear as you look forward in the landscape that we face in 2025, 26, 27, what are you thinking about, or what keeps you up at night relative to what this study reveals?
Wow, that's a tough question, but I guess I actually do have an answer. When I look at the very high prevalence, so across issues, whether you're talking about the binge alcohol use, the illicit drug use, the depression, anxiety, or the suicidality, the highest prevalence is in the 18 to 29-year-olds. And I don't think people are just turning 18 and this is turning on. I think we aren't meeting needs for young population and supporting their transitions into adulthood. And this is something that I'm seeing across the board across income levels, but certainly we see this for the people who have had lower access or use of the education system or coming from less economically secure circumstances. But I do think that some of these effects of COVID are longstanding. We've got kids who are destabilized at very important stages of developmental transition. And I think that's really continuing to affect a lot of our young population. And I think we haven't really tackled how some of these long-term effects, you know, are continuing to manifest themselves. I also think that, you know, we can see in our state relative to other states that issues of truancy, which we would have anticipated, of course, during COVID, we still haven't gotten back to where we should be. And I want to just highlight some of the worries I have about, you know, for young men in our state and in our country. We're seeing declining rates of, you know, transition into higher education, where we're continuing to see women advance in higher ed. We're losing men going into college. Now, I'm not saying college is right for everybody, but it's a marker potentially of thinking about how you can elevate your life and circumstances. So whether that's about college, the kind of vocational training you may want to participate in, the kind of job opportunity you want to pursue, the internships you want to pursue, we're just not seeing the same levels of engagement for young men as we are with young women and for boys in the way that we are with girls. And that's something I think that keeps me up at night. That keeps me up at night because I don't understand what's happening there.
Yeah, we keep seeing that stat, and we seem to talk around it a lot. I wanted to focus on the familial unit and mm-hmm. something that I've observed and your reaction to it. I think a good, sound familial unit for kids that are making that transition from adolescence to adulthood, from high school to college, to become more independent, is huge. When you have that stability of a good, sound foundation at home, it helps, right? You have a sounding board, you're able to do certain things. The interesting thing about COVID for me is that I saw a lot of families that had that really struggled in dealing with the complications of COVID, whether there was a loss of a job or otherwise within that unit, no place to really go and get yourself employed. And it seems to me that that is carried forward a little bit. Although we recovered here in Louisiana, they say faster than most states in the aftermath mm-hmm. of COVID. But our recovery level isn't really nearly as strong economically as other states. And we're still, you know, challenged with not having huge amounts of opportunity. Your thoughts?
I very much agree with that. I think there's a few issues with family that I think are really important to consider. So we have very high domestic violence rates. You were kind enough to invite me to the show previously, and we talked a little bit about that. And with domestic violence, one of the things I was very struck by in terms of looking at our data from Louisiana, we had a comparison with California. We're going to do this study again, and we're going to be looking at Mississippi and Texas as well to sort of see how our state positions across these four states. And one of the things I was very struck by is the level of lethality, potentially lethal forms of domestic violence. So it's pretty severe. We know about 22% of adults, you know, witnessed the violence against their mothers. So we know that part of what makes families secure is certainly economic security, but also a freedom from that kind of violence or conflict in the household. Another issue that we've seen a lot of is that childcare costs are incredibly expensive, and that's also putting a lot of strain on family. So reliable, affordable childcare is something that really affects people's economic security in our state, and it's something I think we continue to struggle with. And then just with regard to family, I completely agree with you. I mean, I personally feel like, you know, I was just, it's lottery sometimes, right? Or mm-hmm. often it's lottery. I got lucky with my family, got super lucky. And I would say that a lot of what I've got today is because I just came from a lot of stability. Not everybody has that. So how do we support and reinforce strengths and resilience for those kids who just didn't get that lottery ticket?
I just delivered a monologue about governance, and I think it holds true in the educational sphere. And when the governance of education lets us down, it makes the challenges for an already challenged familial unit even greater. It has this exponential impact on them. And there's no assistance there. Not that they are going to raise the kids, but it provides a level of stability and a path or an avenue to be in a better position to achieve success. And I don't, oftentimes, I'm not sure our educational leaders get it sometimes, especially in lower ed, because we're doing crazy things. I mean, truancy, if we have a big challenge with truancy, we should be addressing truancy. We should have truancy programs. We should have follow-up. We should find out where these kids are and make sure that we get them into school.
I think that's a really great point. I also want to highlight something you had said with how young. So early childhood education really matters. We know that. It's really good for achieving developmental milestones. And I think we have to be really careful as we talk about the truancy issues not to to do it in a way that makes people hide because, oh, I'm a bad parent, I'm a bad kid. I think we really have to start working on the truancy issues in ways to say, how can we facilitate and support you getting your child to school on time? How can we help ensure that your child is having a positive experience and a safe experience at school? How can the educational system be rewarding? One of the things I was struck by, and I lived in New Orleans a long time ago, but I came back a couple of years ago, and you know, I know that charter schools, and this isn't a debate about the charter school, non-charter school situation, but one of the things I have noticed is that when you lose a neighborhood school, you've got kids who are traveling farther sometimes, and that's going to make some difficulties. So how, if this is what the school system is, how do we help support families get there? I mean, I travel around 3 o'clock, and we are all, it's a nightmare. Everybody's out there at the same time, and I'm not being able to get to my appointment. So being able to get your child to school in the morning, I suspect, can be very difficult for people who have to potentially get to their workplace on time, and your child's not up, and you're, you know, I mean, I had every advantage, I think, and sometimes getting my eighth grader to school on time, he missed, you know, he missed his science class. He was late for, not he missed it, but he was late for science class that eighth grade year very frequently. I remember that. So I think it's about, you know, remembering that people are often trying to do the best they can. How do we give them the supports they need to really get their child into the space and into the education system and into the programs that really can strengthen not only the mental health of our kids, but really what is going to be our adult working population, our mothers, you know, 18 to 29, that's oftentimes the age that women are having a first child. We know that this is the depression during the prenatal period can and postpartum period really contribute to the maternal mortality issues that we see, and it's just a severe issue for our state. So this is something that I think we need to invest in with young people and with young adult populations.
Doc, I'll tell you what keeps me up at night. If we have significant changes in Medicaid, we are in trouble in this state. And
thank you.
You know, we embraced Medicaid expansion. I was one of the few Republicans that supported it. I served on a hospital board. I knew the importance of Medicaid financing in the state of Louisiana as it relates to healthcare delivery. And if there are cuts that are done kind of at this overnight mentality, short term, and not graduated over a lengthy period of time, we will not be able to react. And the next survey you do, I suggest, is going to reveal the underbelly of a lot of different things, and the numbers are going to be far greater. That's what keeps me up at night. Because I don't know that we are prepared for this. We don't talk about it enough. It is a possibility. I don't know that it's a likelihood, but it's something that we should be focused on.
Neil, thank you so much for bringing this up. I want to highlight two pieces of data that we know. We know that our maternal mortality rates declined when, you know, and our maternal morbidities declined when we saw when Medicaid expansion came, because we had greater access for women during the prenatal period and postpartum period to help support them and their infants. So there's evidence to show the importance of Medicaid expansion. And at the same time, we need to make sure that our Medicaid reimbursement for mental health services needs to be on par. I learned recently from a legislator, I did not know this, that we actually pay less than what they pay in Mississippi for Medicaid reimbursement for mental health providers.
Because the state runs it, they make the rules, and you know they set the priorities, and obviously that's always going to be a challenge, and there's going to be the differences there as well. Thank you so much for joining us. Appreciate your time, your insight. Have a great week. Have a great Mardi Gras.
Thanks. Happy Mardi Gras, and always a pleasure. Thank you for inviting me.
Thank you so much, Dr. Anita Raj, Executive Director, Newcomb Institute at Tulane University, Nancy Reeves Drew, Endowed Chair, Professor, Tulane School of Public Health and Tropical Medicine. We will be right back, folks. 504-260-1870 on the Oakland Heart Jewelers Talk and Text Line. Stay with us. So I don't know about you, but I always enjoy talking to Dr. Raj. What's the cost of all of this? Well, in the United States, it's estimated that the mental health issues and substance abuse issues, are costing about $300 billion in lost wages and lost productivity. And in Louisiana, it's estimated to be in the billions. And one might ask, why is that? Well, when you have an overrepresentation of the lower socioeconomic groups, this is what you find. And it continues to be an issue here in this state. It's part of the reason that I spend a little time, probably not enough, talking about our kind of parochial way of thinking, where we look at things from a parish perspective, a city perspective. We have to think broader than that. Because the way that we turn this around is that, for example, our identity down here in Southeast Louisiana, whether we like it or not, is the city of New Orleans. It's the one that has the national identity. We need the city to succeed. And if you look at this as a series of concentric circles, you need that core to be successful, to expand. We lost almost every Fortune 500 company we had here. That's not a good thing. We need more. We need to recruit some back. Unfortunately for us, in many respects, we're third tier. We're fighting to be second tier. And when you're third tier, you're not going to hit home runs. You're going to hit base hits and doubles. It's what I love talking to Michael Heck about, are those base hits that we're hitting. And I know a lot of times I get stopped by folks that say, I heard you talking about that. I don't understand the big thing. They were only adding 30 or 40 jobs. For our community, that's a big win. And you stack win on top of win on top of win and beat back parochial thinking. We'll be right back. When we come back after the top of the hour news break, we will visit with Michael Heck, President and CEO of G&O Inc. Stay with us. We will be right back. This is Newell on WWO.
Flurries of fun await this winter in Indiana. Feel the rush of the Midwest's only refrigerated toboggan run. Ski down snow-covered slopes and marvel at frozen waterfalls on a winter hike. When it's time to unwind, from outdoor fun to indoor escapes, your perfect winter getaway starts in Indiana. Plan your trip today at inindiana.com/winter.
Ah, can't you see it? A sparkling roadside EV quick charge power facility. It's chargers, control panels, and switchgear powering a renewable energy tomorrow that's squeaky clean. We know that unless you have the right supplier, that world might just be a fantasy. But here at Graybar, with years of renewables experience, we live in that world. Get in touch to see for yourself.
We're now ready to depart.
Book your visit at graybar.com. Yep, Graybar does that.
Head to Safeway this week for these amazing digital deals for members. Signature Farms chicken, split breasts, drumsticks, or thighs, buy one, get one free of equal or lesser value when you buy two. Or a wheat variety bread, 24-ounce selected varieties, buy one, get one for free of equal or lesser value when you buy two. And Progresso soup, 18 to 19-ounce selected varieties, buy two, get three free of equal or lesser value when you buy five. Visit Safeway.com for more details. See you in the aisles.
Hey, I'm Josh Fink, owner of Knicks Menswear. Getting married? Don't rent some random suit. At Knicks, we help you own the look for about the same price as a rental. You're marrying the love of your life. Don't you deserve a suit that's yours forever? Knicks Menswear, your friend in style.
Do you believe you were wrongfully terminated for speaking up against your employer? Wilshire Law Firm isn't afraid to go up against corporate giants and will protect you every step of the way. Get justice and feel safe. Call the experts at Wilshire Law Firm at 1-800-800-3333.